Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Our next guest, Deputy Athletic Director at Oregon State, Zach Lassiter, Family Guy. He's the guy behind the scenes that, probably you do a lot of stuff at Oregon State. Can you tell people the job of Deputy Athletic Director? What does this include?
Hey, John. Good to hear your voice. First of all, whatever Scott Barnes, our Athletic Director, asked me to do that day. But we split it up, all the external functions, a lot of the business side of what we do in college athletics, so marketing, ticket sales, social media, communications, just make sure we're speaking with one voice. And really, my job is really to remove hurdles for my team, make sure they're doing everything well, and stay out of the way as much as I can.
We've been talking about tickets. There are a lot of people in tough positions in other industries. StubHub's in a bad spot because there's a whole bunch of events that now have been either postponed or suspended, and people are asking for refunds. And Major League Baseball teams, you could still buy tickets for games like in May and June right now, and who knows if those games are going to be played. This is kind of your world. Help the consumer understand maybe what those businesses are going through right now.
Yeah, I certainly think we experienced it, John, with the cancellation of our spring season, right, with our popular baseball program. And we have great support from the community, and we have folks that, purchase tickets and come to games. And when we had to discontinue that season because of what we're facing, we had to make sure that we created a fan-friendly solution for those folks. And so we've given them a credit to be able to apply that to a future Beaver game, whether that's a baseball game next year or games we're playing in the fall, and that was well received. And I think, whatever the future holds for us, if there's any other delays or things, we've got to make sure that we recognize that the folks that are coming to these games to support us are going through financial situations themselves. So we got to be as compassionate as possible. But I think we're all hopeful and that we're going to be playing, but we need to be responsible with folks that are coming to games.
We've had a lot of talk about, what the markers would be to get back to normal and get back to business. Is there anything that you're looking at in particular? Are you watching the governor? Are you watching the university, the board of trustees, to see what the decisions are made? University president, where do you guys look to?
Yeah, I think we've done a really good job listening to the healthcare professionals and the folks who really understand the health side of it.
Sure.
I think for our organization or any organization, the key is everyone needs to stay in their lane and do what they do well. And so for what I do for our team, I'm the optimist. I'm the one looking forward about, when we're going to play, how can we do that? And usually it's about how can we, get excitement and make game day experience great. Now I think the extra layer that we're thinking about is when we can return to play, how can we make it a safe environment and reduce some of the anxieties that may come when things get back to normal. But I'm smart enough to know when I'm not the smartest person in the room on something. And on this, I'm certainly going to defer to the folks who are making those decisions. They've done such a good job, even from March, right, when we were getting ready to play the next round of the Pac-12 tournament. I think from the very beginning, we were very good about listening to the folks who really understood what we were dealing with. And I'm really thankful we listened to them when we did.
I asked listeners off the top of the show, I keep hearing people say, I want to get back to normal. Can't wait till we get back to normal. When I say that, Zach Lassiter, what is in your mind pops into mind? Is it a cup of coffee, something simple? Is it college football game in a full stadium? What's getting back to normal?
Yeah, for us and what we do from a sports side of things, I think normal is when can we provide all the things that sports does, why we love it, why it's such a part of America and the world, right? And sports provides us maybe an escape from whatever it is we're dealing with. It gives us hope, right? A new season, a new championship. It brings people together, so the opportunity to be together and give each other a high five and a hug. It's also, for us, it's about leadership development, right? We have these 450 young student athletes that, you know, we're looking to develop them on the field and off the field. And right now, you know, they're all over the country, right? We only have about a third of them that are here. Normal is when they can come back to the college town that they chose to spend these 4 or 5 years with. So I think professionally we're focused on those things of taking care of our people, but also understand the platform that we have to be able to provide so much joy and excitement and hope for Oregonians and also Oregon State folks all over the world.
Zach Lassiter with us, Deputy AD at Oregon State. What about your own household? You know, for me, it's as simple as, you know, I'm doing this show from a home studio. Right before this, the 5-year-old and the 3-year-old were putting on their bike helmets, and I'm walking by them, and they said, "Dad, can you ride bikes?" And I'm like, "I'm about to do a radio show." It's strange. What about the Lassiter household? What's going on? What's the scene there?
Yeah, so I have two boys. I have a 13 and a 12-year-old. I think it's probably the ideal social distance age for kids because they're old enough that they understand that dad's working from home. Like, it's not young kids who kind of run in and don't understand why dad's home.
Yeah.
But they're also young enough that I'm still cool enough to hang out with. So they still want to spend time with me and be able to do things. So that's been a lot of fun. With my 13-year-old, I don't know if it is with other people, this has been the year of humility for me as a dad because he's passing me in a lot of things, right? He's now smarter than me. He beat me in chess a couple months ago. We tried to run a 100-meter dash. He now beat me. That he's faster than me. All those things. He's now taller than me. So I'm holding out hope. I'm trying to find things that I can do better than him. And I can tell you what, it's becoming less and less every day. The 12-year-old is still young enough that loves sports and screens and has a bunch of interests. He cooks from time to time. So, you know, I love this time with them. But I'll be honest, it's always been a priority of mine to spend time with my kids. That was installed for me from my parents. And so, I feel very fortunate to spend time with them. And if they still want to spend time with dad, at least for a few more years.
How close was the 100-yard dash?
Not as close as I want it to be.
I remember.
The chess game was closer.
I love that.
And I still feel like if you give me a best of 7, that I could take him because I think I'd get in his head.
You better get him right now because he's only getting faster. And I got news for you, Zach Lassiter. You and I are only getting slower.
I know. Well, it's about finding things that he doesn't know yet. So that's why we're going to mountain bike later today. And I think I can take him in that. But I'll let you know if I lose in that one as well.
Don't even tell him you're racing and then just announce it at the end. We're talking to Zach Lassiter, Deputy AD at Oregon State. The university landscape is interesting to me because, you know, we're all kind of watching students, you know, are they going to go back to class in the fall? Are there going to be games? As administrators, do you guys have a policy now? Are you ordered to work from home? Are you expected to be in the office? Do you do the Zoom calls? And how is that going? By the way, do you endorse Zoom or is it is that what you guys are using on campus?
We are using Zoom. Now, you know me well enough. I'm not a guy who spends a lot of time looking at myself in the mirror every morning. And now on these Zoom calls, I feel like I see my face a lot more often than I'd like to because I'm on it a lot. It's a great platform. I now wonder if we'll ever do teleconferences again because Zoom does allow you to see body language and see if people are engaged. So, yeah, we're all working remotely. We align with the university in what we're doing. So there's a very few of us that may go into the office from time to time for a critical function, but we're all kind of learning how to work in a remote environment. And some of us, I think, accommodated that pretty well. Others, I think, are learning how to do that, but we're giving them tools to be able to do that. And technology now, I think, allows us to do this in ways maybe 10 or 20 years ago. I think it would be a lot harder than it is today.
The landscape of college athletics, you know, if I could ask you a big picture thing here, you know, you've got the Power Five conferences that have separation and have maybe some inherent advantages with revenue that the mid-majors or the non-Power 5 conferences don't have. Do you think that this time and the fact that we're all sort of reevaluating and what's going to happen and will there be an expanded playoff, is this an opportunity for college athletics to figure out what it wants to be moving forward?
I think so. I mean, I think the industry, I've been in it now almost 15 years, and it constantly evolves. I think in general, crisis or significant change generally speeds up transitions. And I think what it's done is it's allowed us to prioritize what's most important and maybe what are wants and what are have-tos. And I think that in talking to folks around the country, it's a very small industry. All of us, know each other or maybe have worked at an institution. Like I've worked at a Power 5 institution. I've worked at a Group of 5 institution. I went to a Division II university. So I've been blessed to be able to see different levels and understand different challenges. And I think I do see some similarities in what we're talking about, but there's a lot of other priorities that I think are being determined in this. And then how we come out of it will probably somewhat be determined by how long this duration continues. I think the fall sports obviously is a huge piece with the football revenue piece for a lot of institutions. But I think those of us that are in the industry understand that we've got to figure out exactly who we want to be. And Atomicus, I think, gives us pause to do that.
Zach Lassiter with us, Oregon State Deputy Athletic Director. When you started out in, let's just go back to your childhood. If you're the same age as your kid, did you say, hey, I want to be in college athletics? What was the dream and how did you get there?
Well, this is how dorky of a kid I was. When I was a kid, my favorite book was this book called The Brethren. I was fascinated by the Supreme Court and politics. And so that was kind of what the route I wanted to go. I chose Willamette University up in Salem and was a politics and econ major, and the state capitol was right across the street. And so that I actually, while I was the kid who played three sports and loved sports, and it was an identity for myself and with my dad as well, doing this for a living was nothing something that I considered until well after going the route of politics. And while I still love helping people, I was working for the Oregon legislature right out of school, and I didn't really enjoy the people I was around. I surrounded myself with. I'm a big teammate guy. I'm like, man, if I can't handle the Oregon legislature, maybe I should really be thinking about, what I'm doing for life. And that things change. And then I went the sports route after that.
Zach Lassiter with us. Before I cut you loose, Jonathan Smith, I think, you have, you're close with him. You understand him. You watch him work on a daily basis. What do the rest of us not see or not understand about Jonathan that you really appreciate?
His sense of humor. He's a really, really funny guy. I think that he, in a lot of ways, appreciates his platform and what he does as a football coach, but I think he's much a better person. He's very grounded. And so I think when you are able to spend time with him that way, you appreciate him. But he's a lot like our coaches here, that when you go to a school and then you become the head coach of that school, right? So he was an alum here. Scott Rook was an alum here. Mitch Canham was an alum here. While Wayne Tinkle isn't an alum here, I mean, it's almost like he was born in Corvallis, just the way he exuded. It's the kind of people that you want to spend time with and that have super competitive and lofty goals and want to be great but want to do it a certain way. And so for him, he's relatively young in his career, but he's incredibly intelligent. And the questions he asks, and at the same time, he's very trusting with those around him. So it's exciting to see a first-time head coach grow the way he has, and I think we're really fortunate to have him. In times like this, you get to know who people really are, and you obviously saw the news this week of the leadership that Scott and he and many others, our coaches, took. This means something to them, and that's exciting. And so I just enjoy spending time with him as a person, and he's a heck of a football coach too.
Zach Lassiter, hey, I wish you the best. Good luck on the mountain bike ride later today, and My dad and I did the same thing, and I'll never forget it. The day that I beat him in a foot race, and he took a picture. He was raising my arm like I'm Rocky Balboa in the ring. I still have that picture to this day. So snap a photo, capture that moment.
Yeah, this is a fun kind of time where, you know, I'm talking to my parents more and spending more time with my kids too. It's like that circle of life. You're seeing what are those traits you took from your parents and maybe what you passed down to your kids. And for me, it's just really exciting that I married someone who's smarter and more athletic. And so I can see how my kids have a much better chance. They have a much higher ceiling, to use a draft term, than I ever will. That's for sure.
I love it. Zach Lassiter, thanks for making time for us. Appreciate you.
All right, John. Take care.
All right. There he is, the deputy AD at Oregon State. Wanted to be on the Supreme Court, or was fascinated by the Supreme Court. Love it. I want you to keep it right here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. I love that story about Zach Lassiter racing his son. My dad was a professional baseball player. I've said this before, and my dad was fast. And I was 18 years old when I beat my dad in a foot race for the first time. And I thought I was fast. Like, by my school standards, my high school standards, my high school baseball or football team standards, you know, I ran well. But I had a firm understanding of what a professional athlete was like, because my dad, even though he was, you know, 21 years older than me, had foot speed that was like a high school kid at like the age of 40. So yesterday, when I'm sprinting up the hills, I couldn't help but think about that first time I beat my dad in a foot race. We literally, and credit to my dad, because he didn't let me win. Like, you know, he didn't let me win as a 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old kid. It wasn't until I was 18 years old, I was a man. And I was like, okay, I think I got you. I never raced him again, by the way, after I beat him. That was it. We hung it up. It, of course, brings us to our big splash. It is the one thing you need to know today, and we do this every day on the program.
The one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
Must be.
The Big Splash! Brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
Well, it's going to be a good big day for the University of Oregon women's basketball program. Kelly Graves' team is going to have three players picked in the top 10 of the WNBA draft. You can bank on that. It's going to go Sabrina Ionescu, number one overall. Satu Savali is going to go number two overall. Those are locks, I'm told. Those two picks, one, two, locks. Bank it. Ruthie Hebert, a lot of people hoping that she slips to number nine so she can end up on the same team as Sabrina Ionescu, but there's some whispers about Ruthie going as high as number six in this draft. Keep an eye on it. Three players in the top nine in the WNBA draft. That is unprecedented, certainly in our state history, and will be a statement about the University of Oregon women's basketball program. Kelly Graves, he will join us on Monday's show. When the dust settles, we'll talk to him about what it was like to see three players drafted in the top 10. Also, could be three players in the top six. Also, we'll talk about reloading. He's got to start over, or does he? When it comes to next season and McDonald's All-American after McDonald's All-American now coming into the University of Oregon, what has changed? What does he have to be worried about and be guarded? Remember, there are some cautionary tales out there. Dana Altman, the men's coach at Oregon, prime example of this, gets to a Final Four. Suddenly the doors were open for different kinds of players, right? He could suddenly get a top five recruiting class or a top 10 recruiting class. Ultimately, was that good for the program or not? Is it the same in the women's game? Great question. I'll ask Kelly Graves that on Monday. Does he have to be, I guess, careful about the doors that are now open? Or is it different in the women's game? Like, in the men's game, I think you have to worry when you are a Final Four program and you suddenly can get, you know, the top players in the country, you have to worry that you're going to be used as a stepping stone and that you're going to lose the culture and you're going to lose the things that made you good. Look at Oregon. Dylan Brooks was part of that team. He was a guy that made the Final Four and led that team. He was an experienced player. Tyler Dorsey, more experienced player. I look at, you know, that Oregon club that season, and I go, you know what? Jordan Bell, Brooks, Dorsey. After that, it became, yeah, Bol Bol, Lewis King, certainly talented players. You weren't going to say no to them, but something was lost in that equation. I wonder if the women's game is the same. I suspect it's a little different because I think incoming top McDonald's All-American players don't expect to go one and done in the women's game. But Kelly Graves will answer that question on Monday. Keep an eye on the WNBA draft tonight. 1, 2, and either 6, 7, 8, or 9. 3 of the top 9 picks.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.